Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you, including the Iliopian Oracles and Pam Adams. I'm Gary Moore on today's program.
So the young people, the conscientious people are saying enough. No, I'm not going to vote for any evil, not the lesser, not the greater. I'm going to stay home. And if the greater evil wins, good. Look at what it's going to do to the country. Let's watch things fall apart, to quote Chinua Achebe. And then maybe people will get off their butts, and maybe we'll have a real candidate with real policies for real change. Maybe that will happen. And if not, then we're going to get what we deserve.
Political science expert Kaya Jai helps us process the many political events that have taken place over the past week. Not the least of which, the U.S. Supreme Court deciding to hear the Trump immunity case, almost ensuring that a trial, if there is to be one, won't take place until around election time in the fall. What were your thoughts when you heard about the Supreme Court's decision to hear the immunity case?
I look at it from two perspectives, glass half empty and the glass half full. From the half full perspective, perhaps they felt that this was such a monumental issue that it deserved a final imprint, if you will, from the Supreme Court on the issue. And if you look at the history of this issue, never, ever, even to the founding of the nation, has it ever been thought that any person is above the law, whether you be president or not. In fact, part of the reason we formed this republic was to get away from the divine right of kings. We didn't believe in such a thing. So glass half full, they want to say, look, let's stop all this messing around, let the highest court in the land say no one is above the law. That's my hope for the reason that they decided to hear the case. Given that there are a number of Trump appointees on the high court, I'm afraid that his acolytes may be attempting to enshrine him as, you know, dictator-in-chief. I think that's a small possibility, though, that they would rule that the president is immune, that the framers never intended for the president to be subject to the laws of the land, especially when you're no longer president. It's one thing to say it would interfere with your duties. It's another after you're out of office to say that you're immune. So I think there's a 25% chance that the glass half empty perspective will come to bear. And it's more likely that the court just said, look, let's make it clear to one and all. The divisions in this country are so huge that maybe the Supreme Court saying no one is above the law will help put some water on all these fires that are burning in the nation.
But the timeline is still an issue, right?
Yes, you're right. I mean, it does push the prosecution of Trump into election time. That's problematic. Again, I still stay with the glass half full perspective.
So when and if the court decides that he is not immune and the trial starts in the fall, and it's around election time, so you have this intersection of this trial and the campaign. Does that benefit Trump or hurt him? I'm thinking it might benefit him because heretofore, whenever he's been indicted, whenever there's been something that would have smashed an ordinary man, he seems to benefit from it. He gets more campaign donations, etc.
Yes, that money, though, and those the swelling in the polls is his base. What does it do for the, you know, middle-of-the-road voter, you know, in the general election, who's looking at somebody running for president that's, you know, already been found liable in a civil fraud case, who is now being tried for basically treason? Will they rush to vote for him? I'm already seeing donors running away from Trump because they feel that their donations are going to go to his legal fund rather than to getting him elected. So a lot of money, instead of going to the top of the ticket, is going to downstream races. I think that trend will continue. People are not the red meat to the base is one thing. Electability with middle America is a completely different issue. So I don't think it will benefit him in the general election to be on trial during the election.
What are your thoughts on the Georgia case with the Fannie Willis scandal?
Well, it depends on how this judge rules on the appropriateness of the relationship between Ms. Williams and one of her investigators. If, as Ms. Williams alleges, there was nothing improper about it, the relationship started after he'd been appointed, and nobody benefited financially from it, that's how the judge sees it, which is what I see from the evidence that's been presented, then yes, I do think the trial will continue and we'll see it before the election. A lot of ifs in this world these days, right?
It is. It really is. And one of the sidebars that we can go down is with the Supreme Court itself and Clarence Thomas. Democrats are saying Clarence Thomas should recuse himself because it has been found that his wife was one of the main people who was pushing Mark Meadows and others in the Trump circle to see if they could prolong him staying in office. What do you think about Thomas in terms of recusal? And then just Thomas himself.
Yeah, Thomas from, you know, if you remember back to the confirmation and Anita Hill, he's always felt bitter and as though, you know, the world was against him. We've had the financial issues about his mother's home and these trips and all of that, and the propriety of getting money from potentially people whose cases you're hearing in front of the court. And now we hear about his wife. I think he's unlikely to recuse himself just on principle. They hate me anyway. No, I'm not going anywhere. You're just going to have to deal with me. I think that's going to be his perspective. I think he should recuse himself. I think his wife was, as you mentioned, totally behind this effort to keep Trump in power. She's been behind some of the big lie claims that have been bandied about. They have to have discussed it as husband and wife. You know they have discussed these issues, and it's so hard to divorce yourself from what you heard at home to what you think about when you're on the bench. So I absolutely agree. I think he should recuse himself from any case involving Trump.
But most likely he won't.
Most likely he won't. As I said, he's felt bitter from day one, and he's going to stick it out. Make me go. What can you do? I'm here for life, and if I don't do it, what are you going to do? This is part of the problem with the way the separation of powers was set up and the language of the Constitution. Unless Congress passes a law to be able to sanction the Supreme Court in cases of improper financial dealings or refusal to recuse, until and unless there are laws passed by Congress, there's nothing we can do. And given this Congress, which is another issue we could discuss, the demise of the GOP, the taking over of the GOP by the MAGA extremists, and the exodus of those who, I'm surprised, I wouldn't even call Mitch McConnell a centrist before today, but we're in a world now where Mitch McConnell actually looks more centrist than the MAGA Republicans, but I digress. There's no way that this Congress will pass any laws limiting the power of the Supreme Court. So we're stuck. There's nothing we can do. If he doesn't recuse himself, what are the sanctions? There are none. So he's got no motivation to recuse himself because there's nothing we can do.
Earlier you talked about money, and Trump's money is funny these days, especially in light of the ruling in New York by Judge Engoron relative to his businesses, ordering him to pay $500 million. And just recently, a judge ruled that, hey, you can't just pay this in partial payment. You got to pay the whole thing. Now, that case is being appealed. Do you think, as some have said, that this is the beginning of the end of the Trump empire?
I think it's a bit too early to say that. What it has done, to those who are paying attention, it's exposed him for the braggart that he is. For somebody who's allegedly worth billions, he should be able to pay this. But he's asking for time because he's going to have to liquidate property in order to get the money. Dude, I thought you were a rich man. I thought you were mega rich, one of the richest in the world, right? So it's damaged, it's tarnished his image. That's one thing. If he can no longer do business in New York, that's a big deal. He's not the sort of politician that businesses seek out because of the political influence they have. And as I say that, I have to say, what the heck are you saying? Because he's got the whole MAGA wing of the Republican Party that he can influence. Because where I was going with was, you know, a former president can get on the lecture circuit and make tons of money, can sit on the boards of this and that and the other thing and make a lot of money. Those avenues really in the mainstream are not available to Trump. So if his brand is tarnished, if he can no longer do business in New York, is he in financial trouble? Absolutely. Is it the end of the empire? I don't know about that. I don't know if I'd go that far.
You wanted to talk a little bit about Congress and Trump's takeover of the Republican Party. You have House Speaker Mike Johnson, who tried once to impeach the head of Department of Homeland Security. That failed and then came back in a narrow vote. He's also been up and down as far as government shutdowns. Is there hope for the Republican Party in the future? I've talked to former 18th District Congressman Ray LaHood, who was the Transportation Secretary under President Obama, back in the days of bipartisan cooperation. Here's Obama, a Democratic president, having Ray LaHood, a Republican, in his cabinet. Ray LaHood, as you know, in polar opposite political thought as far as his son, Darren LaHood, who presently is the 18th District Congressman. Darren LaHood is a MAGA Trump person. And I've talked to Ray LaHood, who says one day in the future, the Republican Party will rise up again. Sensible folks will take over. They will jettison Trump and they'll get back to their principles of fiscal conservatism and this whole radical election denier element will be gone. What do you think?
I think that's very optimistic. But what I'm about to say is even more so. I see America at a crossroads when it comes to political parties. We've had two parties for eons, two viable parties for so long. And now we've got one of those major parties splintering into a far right wing and a more central wing. And there are those who would argue that there's really not much difference between a centrist Republican and a centrist Democrat. Two sides of the same coin. They might be a little bit different on this issue or that, but fundamentally, they're the same. There are a number of young people in particular who are exasperated at the current Democratic administration, especially when it comes to their treatment of the Palestine-Israel conflict. So potentially, I see a left-wing version of the extreme right raising its head on the extreme left. So now what we're going to have is a four-way split between left-wing, extreme left-wing Democrats, centrist Republicans, and extreme right-wing Republicans. Now, what is that going to yield for our country? I don't know. I really don't, because there are so many young people who are ready, who have seen administration after administration, Republican or Democrat, do the same things internationally and domestically. Internationally, bombing brown people all over the place. Domestically, not giving a darn about brown people all over the place. Black and brown and poor folk are always at the short end of the stick, regardless of who's in power. And the young people are sick of it. So they've got two avenues ahead of them now. In this election, I'm really scared many of them are going to stay home because they're sick of voting for the lesser of two evils because they're still voting for evil. And many of them are really principled. So out of all this angst, will we see arise on the left of a charismatic figure that can rally the young and the disillusioned to a new message. And in this money-fueled election system that we have, garner some kind of success, especially on the local level, on a wide scale on the local level, from, you know, sea to shining sea. We have enough people voting in these folks at the state legislature level, and then gradually seeping or flowing up towards the national stage. I could see something like that. That's how the MAGA folks started post-Obama. They, you know, they ran around and you had all of these ultra-conservative Republicans popping up all over the place and being successful. And it's taken them, you know, 8, 10, 12 years to get where they are. But look where they are. They're disruptors. So in the next 8, 10, 12 years, could we see a similar movement on the left? I have a feeling it's coming.
We want to remind our listeners, this is Newsmakers on WPNV. Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of our listeners, listeners like you, including Pam Adams and the Iliopian Oracles. And we are joined by WPNV contributor and political science expert Kaya Jayi. We're talking about a lot of things that have happened in the last week or two relative to national and international politics. Let's stay on the subject of the political parties. And when we talk about Trump, Biden, you're talking about men who are senior citizens and some. Biden has been looked at with raised eyebrows relative to his age. Trump is not that much younger. How do you think that's going to play out?
Well, the age issue is keeping a lot, as I said, of young folks away. I think it's going to be really impactful. Whoever, but it kind of cancels out when you look at it across Republican versus Democrat. They're both old guys. One is, what, 4 or 6 years younger than the other? Big deal, right? So I don't think age itself is going to be that much of a differentiating factor. What will be, though, is mental capacity. You know, I've heard Biden make a number of gaffes, but he's known for gaffes. It's been sort of his thing for the last 20 years that he misspeaks all the time. Trump, on the other hand, his misstatements are more concerning. You know, he conflated the former Speaker of the House with, who was it?
Nancy Pelosi and Nikki Haley.
Exactly, right? I mean, come on now. Yes, they're both women, but other than that, you know, how do you get confused about that? He's made other, if you listen to his speeches, they're bizarre. When you talk about a word salad, I mean, I have to go and read them. And even then, this doesn't make any sense. But it's bombastic, it's full of emotion. USA, USA, interspersed between word salad sentences, and the crowd goes wild, and nobody cares what he says, he's just there. But I think those that are paying attention and listen are going to walk away with the question, is Trump all there? Has he still got it? So I think age is going to cancel out, and competency is going to be the main issue.
Yeah, but you said something earlier about the base. And because I struggle with when you look at Trump and you look at all these clouds over his head, these legal clouds, you know, he's been indicted, convicted. He still has some trials pending. The stuff that he says is inflammatory. And yet there are people who, as Ray LaHood says, will walk over hot coals for him. How does one reason with such folks, or can you?
No, you don't. I'm going to say you write them off, and I don't mean, you know, in that in a derogatory way. It's they're going to vote for him no matter what. There's nothing you can do. So that, I don't know, 30% of the 40% of the people who are really pro, you know, Trump or pro Republican, He's going to get those votes no matter what.
But does that? But wait. But does that? But does that concern? Does that concern you that there's an element out there that is not thinking rationally?
Of course, it concerns me. But if they were there before Trump, they'll be there after Trump. That's a whole. This lack of critical thinking as a basic skill in American society is something we could devote a whole show to. So they're there. There's nothing you can do to change their minds. So what else can we do? We have to rely on middle America, the independent voters, to look at the choices available to them and make the best decision for the country. Can we trust them to do that? Will enough of them show up at the polls? Those are the questions of concern. I'm not worried about those folks who are going to vote Trump no matter what. I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about the rest of the country. What are they going to do?
Well, in Michigan, what a sizable number of people did was they voted uncommitted, led by the Muslim community, who you alluded to this earlier, are upset over Biden's handling of the Israel-Hamas war. Do you think that will be a factor come the fall?
I'm afraid it very well might be, and it might deliver the election to the Republicans. The Biden administration has really fumbled on the issue of Israel and Palestine. The blind support for Israel has backfired. It took how long for the administration to plead with the IDF and the Israelis to please don't target civilians? As terrible as the October attack was, 30,000 Palestinians have died. Let me say that again, 30,000. The population of Illinois State University is 20,000 plus students. So the entire student population of ISU is gone, plus another 10,000. And we're still supplying Israel with money and weapons? Can we imagine any other situation where the U.S. would have tolerated such a situation with direct support ongoing without public criticism and calling to account and demands that this bloodshed end? It's unfathomable to me, and I'm afraid that it may well cost the Democrats the election come November.
Now, you say that, and if it costs the Democrats the election in November, then you're saying Trump wins.
Correct.
And so the specter of Trump winning, that's a whole nother kettle of fish, man. I mean, that's a whole nother ball game. That means all these court cases go away. That means you have an autocrat in office. That means we're in turmoil from a government operational standpoint, right?
Well, yeah, democracy is in danger. And those who are fed up with the status quo will say, good. Maybe that will wake people up and have them shake off this craziness that we've been living in for the past 30 years. How do we expect things to change? What's the definition of madness? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting it to change? So the young people, the conscientious people are saying enough. No, I'm not going to vote for any evil, not the lesser, not the greater. I'm going to stay home. And if the greater evil wins, good. Look at what it's going to do to the country. Let's watch things fall apart, to quote Chinua Achebe. And then maybe people will get off their butts, and maybe we'll have a real candidate with real policies for real change. Maybe that will happen. And if not, then we're going to get what we deserve.
So we're running out of time. And I want to end with a thought from President Obama's book. And in it, and I'm paraphrasing, but he talks about democracy can be messy and difficult. recall that when he first got into office, within a week or two of him being in office, people came to him and said, hey, all of the major banks are failing. And the banks need a big government bailout. And they're too big to fail, and so you got to do something about that. And that was the hit you right square in the face. And when that happened, he felt compromised that this is not what I expected to be doing in my first few months of office, basically perpetuating the status quo. But again, democracy being messy, lesser of two evils, and so you work within this framework, within this imperfect union that we have to try to make it perfect. What you're saying is that we've been teetering on this imperfection for far too long, and now it looks like it's going to implode.
Yes. I mean, if you look at that, I'm glad you brought up the Obama situation. Think about when he was first elected. What was the response from Mitch McConnell and company? Our first priority is to make sure that he fails, that he's a one-term president. That's what a senator is saying about the newly elected president. And he came in trying to reach across the aisle, as you mentioned earlier, and they were not having it. And what we're seeing in America, that was the point. That was sort of a JFK moment. When President Obama was elected and had two terms. That was when, if there was going to be real change, that was when it was going to happen. But they blocked him, they stymied him at almost every court, every turn. He played Mr. Nice Guy for the first 4 years. Had he been more forceful, things might have been different. But putting that aside for a second, what we're seeing today is the backlash to what happened during the Obama administration. The racist white America woke up and said, oh my gosh, look at this. This, what they call now woke culture, is about to take over the country. We can't have it. We got to keep poor people, black people, brown people in their place so that we can maintain our power status. That's how it's been since 1651. That's how it is today. It's no different, except they woke up and said, OMG. These folks are getting too much power. Let's figure out a way to divide and continue to conquer. And what has happened? Look at from the country's perspective, we're doing worse. We're worse off under this no do nothing Republican quote unquote leadership than we were 10, 15, 20 years ago. Clinton to Bush to Obama. I mean, things are getting worse. And it's because the establishment, if you will, wants to maintain the status quo at all costs. And if that means divide and conquer, by God, that's what we're going to do. So we've got the MAGA right who can shut down legislation anytime they want. And there are not enough sensible Republicans to say, this is ridiculous. I'm going to cross the aisle and vote with my Democratic counterparts. Because we have to work for the country. What happened to patriotism? Right? What happened to doing the right thing for the country, regardless of personal gain? Oh, no. Folks are all about, I need to get this done, and I need to maintain my power. That's what it is. And the voting public, we talked about this issue about people who don't think critically, and those who are going to vote for him no matter what. We've been, what did Malcolm X say? We've been bamboozled. We've been hoodwinked. Too many of us are satisfied with the crumbs that are falling off the table. I've got enough money to be comfortable. I'm living in my double wide trailer. I can drink my Pabst Blue Ribbon and watch NASCAR. And when I watch TV and I see those poor people in Somalia or in Bangladesh, I say, thank God I'm in America, because I don't live like that. And so long as they can look down or they can look in the Appalachians and see poor white people and say, ooh, I'm glad I don't live like that. This America is really great for me. As long as they can keep drinking that Kool-Aid, they're going to keep saying that, yep, Trump tells it like it is. Even though what he's telling is complete a falsehood or is incoherent, If you don't have a good education yourself, you can't understand those words, but they sound like your words, and they don't sound as uppity and highfalutin as some of these politicians who are out there using, you know, three-syllable words. I don't know what the hell they're talking about, but I can understand Trump. So we have a whole nation that is, a significant portion of them are in that boat, and they're voting. And we've got a whole bunch of young, educated people who are not. So the balance is swinging. And they're not voting because they're sick and tired of voting for Democrats and getting Republican-light policies.
Yeah.
Where are the... you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get you. And we're going to have to let that be the last word. We will talk again. Always informative to speak with you. Kai Ajayi, political science expert, WPMV contributor. Thanks for being on Newsmakers.
Thanks a lot, Gary.
Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you. We would like to encourage you, if you would like to support Newsmakers or any of the programming here on WPMV, our mini talk programs, or our music programs, you're encouraged to go to our website, mbdcpeoria.org. That stands for the Minority Business Development Center. And we would appreciate your financial contribution to keep our radio station, the only Black-owned radio station in Peoria, in operation. You're listening to 106.3 WPNV. WPNV, we're Peoria's neighborhood voice.